This is Brittany Slays from Unleash the Archers, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Quinn from Icarus Switch, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Welcome to episode 577 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. In episode 577, we are pleased to be rejoined for the first time in about 5 years, Brittany Slays, the vocalist of the band Unleash the Archers. She is involved in a new album that has just dropped at the end of July. It is a remake of the Transformers soundtrack. The band is dubbed as Knights of the Unicorn, which is made up of some great musicians and some special guest vocalists. Joining them on this re-recording is Sebastian Bach doing his version of the song that was on the original album. Brittany Slays, who sings the kind of iconic Transformers theme song. Also joining her, Marco Segeda, who was on the show not all that long ago, vocalist of Death Angel and also of Kerry King, and a lot of other great musicians. So in just a moment, we're going to talk to her. And then we're going to be joined later by some musicians whose name you recognize from a classic Pittsburgh band, but this is under a different name and a slightly different style of music. So we're going to talk to some gentlemen from Icarus Witch about another band called Iron Flame. So we'll get to that in just a little while, kind of tease that. So first we're going to turn our attention to Brittany Slays, Unleash the Archers. As we look back, she and I were talking off mic. Unfortunately, haven't been to Pittsburgh just yet, but hopefully as she mentions in the interview, they're preparing new material as a band that continues to kind of build momentum as it goes. I look at that band kind of like a snowball rolling downhill. And I see a lot of bands like Coheed and Cambria, to name a few, but with a little more metal edge to it. But the way they go about producing stories and imagery and things like that, I see great things from Unleash the Archers on the horizon. So without further ado, we're going to get to Brittany Slays.
Transformers.
ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome back to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line from Unleash the Archers, Miss Brittany Slays. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to come back to us. And it's a pleasure to talk to you this far from the pandemic. The last time we talked to your band, along with every other band on the planet, was trying to find different ways to stay afloat and stay relevant in a world where you couldn't tour. So it's great to be on that side of that episode in life.
For sure.
You are involved in a new album that came across our desk, a re-recording of the Transformers soundtrack, and it kind of saddened me when I read this: celebrate the 40th anniversary of the animated series, which that didn't feel good to read that. But can you talk a little bit about how you got involved with this? Was this something that came, like, you sought out, or like, where did this all kind of originate?
Yeah, so the album is being distributed through Reigning Phoenix Music, which is the record label. And they were kind of just reaching out to contacts that they knew and asking if they wanted to be involved. And one of those contacts was my manager.
Okay.
And so he approached me and said, "Hey, you know, they're doing this Transformers album. Do you want to take part?" And I said, "Absolutely, 100% yes." And they said, "Okay, just make it sure you're on board and we'll come back to you." And then a couple of weeks later, they were like, "Okay, they want you to do the theme song." So I was like, "Okay, no pressure."
Yeah, the one song that everybody knows from the show.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what you get. Okay.
Yeah. So, but of course, it was a resounding yes from my side. So, yeah, it was just an awesome opportunity, and wanted to be a part of something insanely iconic. So,
yeah, it was neat. I mean, I have to ask: was this before or after Sebastian? And for those not familiar yet, Sebastian Bach was involved in this as well. Was he already on board? Did you take the song he wanted? How did that go?
Well, I think he was on the original record, so he was doing his original songs again. And then Stan Bush also did his original songs again for it.
Okay.
So they got the originals for quite a few of the tracks, actually. And then for some of the others, they got some guest vocalists to step in. So it was, it was kind of, just a really cool opportunity. And honestly, I knew The Touch, but I didn't know it was from the Transformers movie. So I was kind of like, okay, like, this is awesome. And just knew that I had to be true to the original while still trying to make it my own and not ruffle too many feathers.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a delicate thing when you redo a song. I think, you know, especially when you get into theme songs of things, like, some of them should never be touched. And then I think of the Ramones covering the 67 Spider-Man, which was just brilliant. But it could have gone so wrong. You know, and you know, there's a couple other, you know, theme songs, like I think of Quincy Jones and Sanford and Son, and then some things that you probably shouldn't mess with. Was there any trepidation being the theme, like, that this one might have been not the one you want to have your name on just because of that potential backlash? Or was it was a no-brainer for you once you heard, you know, what you were working with?
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of like, wow, cool, let's do this. What an awesome, you know, opportunity. And I didn't really realize, you know, because it's, yes, everyone knows the song, but I didn't think that it had this sort of identity to it already that would be stepping on anyone's toes, which I definitely learned was not the case when the song came out. And so many people were like, "The original Lion version was perfect. Why did you touch that?" And it was just kind of like, well, it wasn't my idea. I was contracted to do this. So, and I did try and stay as true to the original Lion version as possible. But also kind of doing my own thing. And it was really more of just a, you know, hey, what a cool idea to redo this album for a new generation to discover because, it was 40 years ago, and maybe it was time for this album to convert some people into metalheads or rockers that didn't know that they were, just like it did back in 1986. So, I was just kind of only after the fact did I really realize that some people were kind of like, this was their special thing. So
But you got to consider that that maybe isn't the audience you're trying to reach, when you do something like this. Like you said, this is going to reach a totally different demographic than the hardcore people who are, let's say, of the age where the 40 years ago that version was everything to them. Did you guys kind of just do this in your own individual studios, or was this somewhat collaborative? Usually when you see things like this and all the, the number of people you've got, Marco Segeda and Sebastian, I'm assuming not everybody piled into a studio in West LA.
No. Unfortunately, as
Maybe in
much
86, not in
yeah.
2026.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. Maybe that was what happened. But no, this time around it was basically just the musicians. The session guys recorded all the songs and then sent it out, and the vocals were, I mean, at least in my case, I recorded over what had already been done and was just like given a sort of half mastered sort of version of the song. With everything in it that was going to be there, so that I didn't, do something and then all of a sudden, oh, that's a guitar solo, So, and then I just ha went into my usual studio in Vancouver and recorded the vocals there.
How is that? Like, I think everybody's seen some documentary somewhere of, either Jimi Hendrix laying down to sing his parts or Stevie Nicks in a little tiny phone booth doing her thing. But in an era where you're doing this and you can kind of go away to where you're comfortable as a musician and work on this without an entire band and an A&R guy and a bunch of people from the label staring at you through plexiglass, is it helpful or is it weird singing without getting a little bit of feedback from those you're singing for?
Well,
You know,
that's
you
why I'm pretty particular about the engineers that I use because I do like that feedback and I like having someone that understands me and my voice and what I can do. And someone that I can kind of back and forth with in there because otherwise it is pretty isolating. And so I have a couple guys that I really enjoy recording with, and I just asked one of them if they were available, and he was like, yep, let's get in there. And it was so it was just he was a hired gun in the studios as just as much as I was. So we just kind of went in there and did our thing. And I'd go through it and I'd be like, oh, I was kind of thinking maybe of doing it this way, and let me try something else. And so I'd do that, and he'd be like, no, I like the other way. Like, why don't we just keep it at that? I'd be like, okay, sure. And then and then I'd be like, I'm thinking of doing another harmony on this. I was like, how about we go? And he'd be like, higher. And I'm like, yes, higher. Like, okay, let's do it. We just kind of work together that way. Which, yeah, it is awesome to be able to do that because, you get flown somewhere to work with someone who you're not familiar with, and they don't know what you can do, or they have a sort of a fixed idea of what they wanted, and then you come in with ideas and it's a little different from their vision, and you can kind of butt heads a little bit. So I definitely enjoy, I do, I love doing guest vocal work when I can. It's a lot of fun to kind of hear your voice on other people's music and to kind of hear the possibilities of what can be done, and a lot of times I get great feedback as well. Just kind of like, oh man, like I never dreamed the song would sound like this. You changed it from what I was thinking, but it's great. Stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, and it's a great way to grow the brand of your band. You if someone who might approach this and say, I'm just, a massive Marco Segeda fan. I need everything he's ever done. I buy this album, or I'm a huge Transformers fan, or whatever. I hear your voice, and then I think, oh, this is pretty cool. This voice is awesome. I really like what you're bringing to it. I'll go check out, and especially in the age of the internet, where I can go check out, your entire catalog in seconds. It's a great way to build the brand. When you're working with that engineer, how much, like, when you think of what makes your engineer or engineers so good, is it technical skill, or is it just their ability to be honest and know your instrument as well as you do, and being that sounding board that has, you have the faith in to listen to their feedback, and they have the faith to give their feedback honestly?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? So they know the programs, they know what plugins to use to make you sound great. They know how to like edit things. Like you'll be like, "Oh, I loved the first half of that pass and the second half of the other pass, but the only place to really put them together is in the middle of this breath, and it's kind of like, "Oh no, I can do that, no problem." And just having the technical skill to be able to manipulate what you do is really important. But also, to be able to hear a vocal, I think it's especially important with vocalists, but it's the same thing with guitar and all of that, is to be able to hear the potential in the performance and to be able to say, I think you can do that better, or you know what? That was great. It has something that I can work with, or just the emotion in that part is so perfect. It's just this one word was a little out of tune. Just let me tune that, and it's going to be the perfect pass. That kind of thing. So just kind of knowing both sides of it, because I've worked with people where they have great skill with on the keyboard, but when I say, "What do you think of that?" They're just like, "Oh, yeah, it's great," and it's just kind of like, "Oh, okay."
You don't necessarily need a yes man,
No.
in your, I think that could be a dangerous thing. I mean, it's certainly sometimes you know your voice better than anyone, but sometimes you need that impartiality, and you said something in there, I think, that was really interesting, was knowing what they can do with the vocal take. Because, I think there's a lot of really great stuff, especially on TikTok, where I'll see, producers take a vocal and morph it into the final product. And that being able to hear you sing it raw and know what they can do with it on the other side is a skill in itself. So,
Yeah, it is truly remarkable. I mean, Jacob Hansen has been our mix master guy for three records now, and I don't have to worry. I know that I don't have to worry that
Yeah,
he's
that's
going to make it sound amazing. And so when I'm in the studio with him, and I do something five times, and I'm like, "Oh, I don't, I'm just not happy with that," and he says, "No, I got it." Then I know that I can
You,
trust
you,
him
you,
100%.
yeah, and that's, and I've talked to musicians many times over the year who don't have that objectiveness. Some amazing guitarists, world-class guitarists, who will tell me they did 80 takes of something because, they don't know when to say that's enough, or that's good enough, or that's, I've got what I need. And then you could potentially end up with something so sterile, because you're trying to sing it.
Perfect. And perfection
It
is
ruined many a records.
yes, yeah, for sure.
I can think of, there's a couple of bands that I won't name names, where I think of their record, and I say, okay, this is a perfect record, but it's not one I go back and listen to. I can think of, you look at, from a production standpoint, like Guns N' Roses, for example, their perfect record was the sloppy one.
Yeah, where it's just the mistakes make it, and like the, "Oh man, I heard the drumstick on the snare, like in behind there," but it doesn't matter because it was just great, it's just, or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
It's when you try to get too perfect that it ends up sounding like a drum machine, or
Exactly.
So, you mentioned working with the same engineer for a new album, so that is a great segue into, are we working on a follow-up to the 2024 record, or I know you guys have done some European dates this summer already, or are you guys kind of just in a touring phase at this point as a band?
We're actually, just on a bit of a break here in order to write. So we toured a bunch last year, and we were just kind of like, okay, let's take a step back and start focusing on the next record, because we knew we wanted to take our time on this one and give ourselves some room to breathe, some room to listen to other music and be influenced by something new and hopefully find something new that we can incorporate into our sound so that we don't just write the same record over and over again. So we've got the concept, the story behind the album written, and we've got a bunch of demos kind of plugged in to what songs we think they'll have the right fit for, and we're just kind of slowly working on each song, kind of track by track, to make it the best that it can be, and make sure that it fits tonally and emotionally into the record properly, and hopefully, hit the studio early next year, maybe.
Does the story, is that the hard part, or is that more the fun part?
That's just my brain on overdrive coming up with too many ideas, and no, that's I mean like writing the story and putting it into chapters kind of in such a way that they can become songs, that's the easy part. It's figuring out how to make the song sound like that point in the story, and then lyrically telling the story without being too on the nose kind of about it. That's the hard part, is conveying that story in such a way that still makes it approachable while telling the story, still makes it a song that someone can hear outside of the record and not be completely confused by what's going on.
No, that's a excellent point. I think of some of the great albums that like an Operation Mindcrime,
Yes, I
when they
knew you
really
were going to say that. I was just like, that's what I was thinking right when you
Yeah,
said
I
that.
mean, you think of, I remember hearing I Don't Believe in Love. I didn't need to understand Dr. X or, Sister Mary. I just was like, this is a ass-kicking song. And as you were talking, I'm like, with all the things that go into this, and you think of the sequencing and the chapters and sonically, you don't want every song to kind of mesh together. And like, did you ever look back and say, damn, I wish, a younger version of me would have just wrote 3.5 minute love songs like everybody else and made your life a little bit easier, or do you still enjoy that part of it?
No, absolutely. I love it. I mean, sure, maybe one day I'll do like, I don't know, a little standalone EP or something like that of just generic tracks, and because that is fun as well in itself, just kind of having a song with its own story just contained within that one song. But it's just so much fun writing these records as concept records and telling a story and having something other than the music that people can get interested in and sort of research and figure out, and also to drive, ideas for music videos and artwork and just merchandise behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff. Just having this cohesive theme, this dry constant driver behind it all is very nice and a lot of fun.
I can, as I'm listening to this, this sounds very similar to a conversation I had with Coheed and Cambria, with almost the exact same kind of thing. It's, you've got it, there's so much more than just the music to all this, and it's impressive as hell to think about all that. You've got artwork that, comes out of this, and so many different directions, and I think it makes it fun for the fans too. You get into an album, and then you're reading graphic novels on it. You're reading the liner notes to get the, well, if you still have liner notes, but different story there.
Absolutely.
But you're reading the lyrics and getting into the characters and the story and all that stuff. It's so immersive. Isn't it? Maybe not for everybody, but it's certainly for those who get it. So we'll look forward to that. Well, Brittany, I want to thank you for your time. Hopefully, we'll get you to Pittsburgh pretty soon. But looking back, I think you've played Pennsylvania before, but I have not. I don't see that you've ever been to Pittsburgh. So hopefully, we'll get you out this way soon. Maybe on the next album, we'll get the tour through town and love to
Would
see you
love that
guys.
for
Awesome. Well,
sure. Yeah.
all right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and I wish you guys all the best.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Rock legend Billy Idol. Live in Burgettstown. Billy Idol. It's a nice day to tour again. Billy Idol. Live at the Pavilion at Star Lake, August 20th. Get tickets now at livenation.com. Part of the Minutemen Workforce Solutions Concert Series.
All right, Transformers. The movie, the soundtrack, the reformatted edition. Available on Raining Phoenix Music in conjunction with Hasbro, the toy manufacturer. That album was released on the 24th of July, so it is available now. As I mentioned, you've got Sebastian Bach, Marco Segeda, Brittany Slays. That should be enough. And there's a lot of other great musicians on this album as well. So you don't have to be a Robots in Disguise fan to enjoy this record. Really some quality stuff. So you can check that out. We're going to turn our attention now to a band called Iron Flame, which is kind of out of the Wheeling, Ohio, Pittsburgh Valley. And features vocalist and instrumentalist in this case, Andrew DeCagna, who you will recognize is also the front man of Pittsburgh's Icarus Witch. This band, as he describes in the interview, has kind of predated his involvement with Icarus Witch. If you've been in Pittsburgh in the last 20 years, you know the name Icarus Witch. They just had a magnificent set last fall, opening for Bruce Dickinson, Stage AE, and really created some great stuff. And Andrew has taken on the vocal reins of that band now for a couple of their releases. And this was kind of his band leading into Icarus Witch. So Andrew writes all the music, records the guitars, drums, bass. But what he has done is enlisted some incredible musicians to work with him, including Icarus Witch's Quinn Lucas, who joins on some of the guitar solos, and also Noah, the drummer of Icarus Witch, plays as well, but also features Jesse Scott and James Babcock on bass. So it is not just an Icarus Witch clone. The music is slightly different in themes. This is Andrew's writing as opposed to Icarus Witch, which is the product of Jason Myers and Quinn Lucas collaboration. So you're getting different styles of music, but you're getting Andrew's searing vocals. If you are a fan of kind of the traditional 80s metal, and I don't mean hair metal, but metal, the Dios, the Halfords, the Dickinson, the guys who had that operatic kind of singing, Andrew is a great embodiment of that. And it just blows my mind that he not only can sing that well, but made this great of a record, sans the guitar solos, on his own. So really was very pleased to get a chance to talk to the guys. They have a couple of shows in the Wheeling, Pittsburgh, Mount Pleasant area. So if you're listening to this and you're in Western Pennsylvania, there's a chance to see them in Lawrenceville. There's a chance to see the album release show in Wheeling. There's an Icarus Witch show coming up in Mount Pleasant. So we'll detail that and have all the dates for those in the interview itself. So without further ado, we're going to play you some Iron Flame.
Born without trauma.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. I believe for the first time for both of them, we have from Iron Flame, and I'd be remiss not to say from Pittsburgh's Icarus Witch, we have Andrew DeCagna, Quinn Lucas on the line. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Doing very well. We're here today to speak primarily about the release of Andrew's, I would say, I'll call it his brainchild, Iron Flame. Fair assumption there, Andrew. This is kind of your baby, and you've let some of your friends from the Witch in to kind of lend some talents.
I would say that I am lucky enough that I have these people who like the music enough to want to get on stage and play it with me. I'm blessed in that respect and ever grateful for it. I joined Icarus slightly after Iron Flame had been formed.
Okay.
Not long. I'd say within a year.
Okay.
But just afterwards, it was Iron Flame was are the first time that Quinn and I have ever worked together on a collaborative level. We have been friends for a long time and in our own, you know, respective bands, and always wanted to work together. And Iron Flame was kind of the perfect catalyst for that.
So talk a little bit about what Iron Flame is to you, and maybe contrast a little bit. Obviously, this is your writing. It sounds like you're the chief cook and bottle wash for the bulk of the music. But is that the big differentiation, or for a fan of Icarus Witch, what is kind of the difference sound wise?
Well, there is a sonic difference. If you ask me, there always has been. I mean, Icarus predates Iron Flame by, you know, over a decade. So, Icarus is a bit of a musical chameleon, or a metal chameleon, if you will, to where it's can wear many different hats, stylistically speaking. You can't really put Icarus Witch in a box as firmly as you can Iron Flame. But I would say the main difference is in the and also a big selling point for me being becoming a part of Icarus, which was that I was not responsible for the much of the creative process. As far as Icarus goes, it's mainly the brainchild of Quinn and the bassist Jason Myers, the founder. Mm-hmm. And they put their heads together for a long, long time and bounce musical ideas off of each other, long before I ever hear these songs.
Right.
And honestly, that's my main fear when I was, or concern, I should say, when I was asked to be a part of Icarus, which was it not sounding too similar to. Mm-hmm. To what I had going on in Iron Flame. And thankfully, you know, the way that we write, it is a really cool formula, a really cool method that's not broke, so we're not fixing it. And the two entities couldn't be confused with one another at all, other right. than the lineup, if you ask me.
Yeah,
sure. And Quinn, when you I looked at this and it, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're injecting just the guitar solos in the tracks, correct? For
yes,
Iron
right.
Flame. So when you're doing that, you know, you've played on your own material. You and Jason have been doing that for a long time. When you're stepping into Iron Flame, do you feel you approach soloing different? Is it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the base of the soup is always there. It's just kind mm-hmm. of what I do is as a player.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tend to lean in a lot on like a lot of vocal themes that Andrew has going on. And mm-hmm. I like to kind of like build off of those a lot.
Right.
I tend to stretch my legs in a little bit different way with the Iron Flame solos. Whereas, I always try to, and no matter what solo I'm playing or what band, I always try to create a song in a song
Right.
kind of approach. And this gives me the chance to lean on some influences that I don't necessarily lean on for the Icarus Witch stuff. And also having another fantastic guitar player to kind of bounce ideas off of and ultimately learn from.
Yeah.
Jesse and I have kind of mixed and mashed our kind of styles together over the years. And it's a lot of fun to kind of see what we can create as far as like counterbalance and contrast from each other.
Yeah. It's got to be kind of interesting. Just, you mentioned Jesse. There's in the histories and halls of heavy metal, so many great guitar duos, and there's, you need to look no further than, Edward Van Halen, Randy Rhoads for bands with a single guitarist, but it's certainly a different discipline in some respects. You need to learn to get out of each other's way. You need to learn the unison, when you're playing alone,
Absolutely.
you've got to fill space differently. One of my favorite discussions I ever had was talking to Mickey D when he was in Motorhead about how he drummed completely different playing in a trio. Things
Yeah.
you don't think about. Do you find yourself kind of, is it a little less stressful, maybe a little more relaxed when you're doing a show with Iron Flame because you've got someone to kind of a yin to your yang?
Yeah, it really is, and I find it incredibly enjoyable, because it's kind of like that the buddy system, right? We have each other's backs, and it's really cool to feel the power of like those dual leads and harmonies, live. And it just kind of it makes it both Jesse and I, you'll catch us smiling at each other live, it's because we're having a blast doing it. So I find it refreshing. I really do.
Now, Andrew, I'm listening to this album thinking this guy's, does he need two other guitars? Because, just the songs themselves are well written. No slouch there. You did all the instruments on this record except for the solos, am I correct?
That's correct, but you would be not necessarily correct with your question of does he need these two guitar players, because I absolutely do. The one department where I am totally and utterly inept is the lead guitar department. I cannot do that. At gunpoint, I would die. I'm just it's something that has never come naturally to me, and I'm totally comfortable with that. But it is, I can't pretend like it's not a huge part of a your typical heavy metal song. When it comes to the structure, everybody's always waiting for the solo. It's kind of the cherry on top, isn't it? So, yeah, I absolutely need these guys, and they bring elements to these songs that would never come to me in my wildest dreams. It's kind of the Christmas morning for me when I finish an album and give it to them, and they give it back to me, and I get to hear what they've done with it, and it's almost like listening to an album that I didn't, write the music for, because I'm just so enamored with what they've done with these songs. It's a truly cool process to behold.
So when they you I'm assuming doing a lot of file sharing because you guys aren't next door neighbors, but
For sure.
and this is 2026, so this is
Yeah.
kind of the we have entire record labels built on albums that can be done remotely.
Yeah.
When you do the song, you're I'm assuming leaving X number of bars kind of hole in the middle of your song. You send it to these guys. Do you get just give me one solo? Do you give me five solos to pick from? Do you go through and like, does he send it to you kind of dry sans a lot of effects, and you go through and you're mixing and mastering to make it sound cohesive. How do you get it to?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a general rule of thumb if you're sending anything to anyone else. If it's going to into someone else's audio workstation, you kind of want to send them something that is, without effects, so they can experiment with what is going to make it sit in the mix the best without being encumbered by the effect. So yeah, they definitely send them to me dry, but as far as versions, no. There's been one or two times where we've went back and forth and didn't go with the very first version sent, but never has there been like, oh, here's three versions of a solo for this song. You pick your favorite or comp one together of your liking. It normally it's I give them free rein on absolutely everything, and just basically say, here's the time stamp, here's the window of time that you have to work with for the solo section, here's the key, here's the tempo of the song, and just kind of let them run wild, and normally that always produces the best results.
That is a leap of faith.
Yeah.
That is certainly that's the that's
A
like leaving.
familiar leap though, for we've
Yeah.
been doing this for quite some time now, so.
I'm thinking of this as kind of like the first night you leave your kid with a babysitter. You've got him you've got him this far, and you're trusting him for that, even if it's
Yeah.
just one night. Now, Quinn, when you do this, when you're approaching soloing on his material, how is that experience when you're doing this and you're sending it to him, for his feedback? I'm assuming with Icarus Witch, you've got different people you've got to combine with you and Jason, are going to go back and forth. But these are killer songs. There's some thinking like I want to go this direction, but I think maybe this is better suited, or what's the thought process?
Usually my process is pretty barbaric. I will kind of I'll listen to the song as a whole, usually a few times before I even pick up a guitar and noodle around with it. I'll just kind of see what the vibe of the song is. And then, I'll pick up a guitar, kind of jam along with it a couple times, and then I'm so old school when it comes to this stuff, that I will want to play the solo section. I will want to record it as a single take as much as possible, and only go back in and kind of fix things that or punch in maybe a few passages here or there. Just because, again, I want to hear what it's going to sound like as a whole, rather than like, I really love this phrase I came up with. Now I'm going to come up with another one and match them together, which would probably save me a lot of gray hair and thrown guitar picks.
But it
But
loses something when you
yeah, like I want it to have, anytime that I'm recording a solo, I want it to have an essence of what a band would sound like live. Or what a guitar solo would sound like live or feel live. Like, it should still be exciting, not something that was like generated in this mysterious guitar solo lab. So I will go through and I'll jam a couple times and I'll get a couple ideas together. And then I'll keep jamming until I kind of get a fully refined idea, and then I'll track it. And then I'll just make sure, okay, I'll fix the, if there's some things here and there, I'll fix it. And then I'll set on it for a day or two and come back and listen to it. And if I completely hate it, I'll start over. By and large, like, my whole end goal is I just want it to be, like Andrew said, like the icing on the cake kind of thing. Song within a song, that where like melodically it can stand on its own. But once it's in the song, it's never taking anything away from anything. It's never distracting you from what's coming next. If anything, I really like to kind of segue into the next part, if
Yeah.
that makes sense. And I would like, everyone's their own worst critic. And whenever I'm playing or recording on the Iron Flame stuff, I'm hypersensitive to that because it is an Iron Flame song,
Yeah.
and this song is always so good. I want the solo to represent that as well.
Yeah. So take me through live. I mean, are you able, everybody's got different projects. You guys are in other projects outside of these. Are you able to do a lot of live dates? Are you coordinating band members in different towns, etc. And what's on the docket for Iron Flame?
Yeah, it's if you just have to be mindful of every musical project that you have going on when you are involved in multiple projects like Quinn and I are. And as long as you are doing that and being mindful of every project and not neglecting any one over another, then things seem to fall into place. I mean, you have to be a little bit of a clever purveyor of time management, if you will, but it doesn't take a whole lot. I don't think I'm like any master of time management by any stretch, but I think that every year there's no plan of like, well, this year I want this band to be the most active on stage or whatever. It's never like that, and I just kind of leave. I treat it like life in general and just leave it open to the whims and wills of the universe. And when you do that, things just tend to fall into place without much conflict. And
Gotcha.
so yeah, I'm really happy with the amount that both bands are being active this year because mostly at the beginning of the year, we didn't have so many things lined up, if at all. So things did kind of fall into place as the year opened up, and I'm just really grateful for the opportunities that we have.
Absolutely. And you guys have a collectively a couple different local shows. You're doing a show the 28th in Wheeling as an Iron Flame. Is that kind of the first? I know it's labeled as an album release, but is that kind of the official album release for anywhere, or just happens to be kind of the local album release?
Well, not to correct you, but you are one day off. It's the 29th,
I'm
actually.
sorry,
That's okay.
29th.
It's the last Saturday in August, and it will be at the Rose Garden in Wheeling, West Virginia. And yet, it's technically our album drops next a week from the date that we're speaking, which
Sure.
would be August 14th is the
Sure.
date that the actual album drops. So it's not, the official release show, no, but it is on a local level. We'll not have play live locally until that date. So that's the date we're dropping it and celebrating it with our local fans.
And for those who are listening to this, who might be recognizing these guys from their alter ego of Icarus Witch, also on the bill that night. So if you have, one preference for another, for how you want your metal, you're going to get them both there that night.
That's
And
right.
then a couple other shows in the Pittsburgh area. You're doing the Thunderbird Cafe in Lawrenceville on the, am I correct, Saturday the 12th. That's a 2-day festival, but you guys are playing on
It
the 12th.
is. That is
Okay.
correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then for fans of the Witch, you guys will be in Mount Pleasant, which is becoming kind of an annual thing. If my
Oh,
memory
yeah.
serves me well, you'll be at Helltown Brewing, for a show there. And do you guys happen to know, are there other bands on the bill that night, or is it just Icarus Witch?
We will have a supporting act that night, but
Okay.
it's just going to be a two-band endeavor, like it normally is at Helltown. It's an early show. It's 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. It is all ages, and it is a free show.
All ages free and early. I
Yes,
love that's you're saying everything perfect there.
all the right words.
All right. Well, guys, I want to thank you. Oh, and I should ask, I'd be remiss not to ask because I noticed the link to pre-order this is all in German.
Right.
Will physical product be available for purchase at any or all of these shows
Oh,
from where
yes,
I'm playing?
absolutely. And if you can't get to the shows, if you're too far away, the album will drop August 14th, and our Bandcamp page will have absolutely everything, CD, multiple variants of the vinyl, as well as some other merchandise pertaining to the new album. And if you want to jump on there, it is ironflame.bandcamp.com.
Okay. And I noticed in somewhere I was reading about this album, a mention of a mysterious ninth bonus track. Is that on one of the CDs on the vinyl?
Yes. Well, no, it's only on the CD actually. It
Okay.
wouldn't fit on the vinyl, hence the need to put it on the CD format. And I just like to do just slightly different things with each format to, I mean, basically give the listener incentive if they really like the album to buy it in multiple formats. So, like the LP, if you're buying it from us on Bandcamp, the first 50 copies are gonna come with an exclusive slip mat for
Okay.
your vinyl turntable that's got the album artwork on it. And so that'll be your bonus for the vinyl format. And then yes, for the CD you get an extra bonus track.
Extra. I think I'll go Slipknot for that if
Right
I had to
on.
pick one. But I haven't heard that ninth track, so once I hear it, I might change my mind. But
Right on.
gentlemen, I want to thank you so much. I know you guys have a busy schedule, so I'll free up for a few seconds before you need to jump into an interview. And I want to thank you guys. We'll see you guys on the 29th, the 5th, the 12th, and I'm sure many other times to come. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
And a big thank you to Andrew. That is Iron Flame. Again, their album is available August 14th. So within a day or two of you hearing this, if you're listening to it when it first is released, you have to wait maybe a day or two, but the album will be out later the week that this is released. There's a album release show on August in late August, as we mentioned, the interview Icarus Witch, which features Andrew and Quinn, will be doing a show in Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania, at the Helltown Brewery, and they're also doing a festival in Lawrenceville, which we mentioned. We'll have links to all of those shows with times and other bands on the show. Also, we'll have links to Andrew mentions the Bandcamp to get a hold of Iron Flame and Icarus Witch. We'll have links to both of those. And if you've not invested the time in going back and listening to these bands, I really encourage you. Always a bit of a misnomer that because a band is local, a band is somehow inferior. So these guys can hold their own with any touring metal band and have in the past. So I invite you to check those guys out. Head over to IronCityRocks.com. You can hit the show notes for all the information on them, as well as Brittany Slays and the Transformers re-recording and Unleash the Archers. And we invite you to check that out. If you follow us on social media, Iron City Rocks is the social media for everything. We have contests, ticket giveaways. If you want to know if a show is coming, we're your source for that information in really the Western Pennsylvania area. Also, we've been having a lot of fun over the last few months of going back and unearthing old concert flyers from shows that have been here in the past, which I think people seem to really enjoy going, I remember being at that, 1991 show at Club Laga or wherever it happened to be. So we've been going through and pulling out a lot of that stuff to kind of walk down memory lane. So invite you to check that out as well. You can drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Let us know. Drop us bands on some of the great metal bands out there that we may be missing. There is no shortage of music that comes into Iron City Rock's mailbag. Unfortunately, it's more than really mortals have time to listen to. So sometimes it is truly a matter of weeding out the great stuff. So hopefully we're doing that. If we're missing something, please let us know. IronCityRocks.com. Appreciate your time. And until next time, thank you for listening.